basketball players in the playoffs while they were losing the game were looking at their cell phones. I'm guessing they won't be playing any much more soon, any soon. Acts chapter 8. And we'll look at verse, let's just look at verse 26, please. And the angel of the Lord spake unto Philip, saying, Arise, and go toward the south, unto the way that goeth down from Jerusalem unto Gaza, which is desert. And desert in the King James Bible doesn't mean sand. Usually means deserted area. Could be sand, might not be sand. And he arose and went, and behold, a man of Ethiopia, an eunuch of great authority under Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who that's not what they call themselves, by the way. That's just the Greek formulation for anybody south of Egypt, who had the charge of all her treasures and had come to Jerusalem for to worship. So this guy, in some fashion, had connected himself to Judaism and was probably a God-fearer. He was returning and sitting in his chariot and read, this is the Greek form of Isaiah the prophet. Then the Spirit said to Philip, Go near and join thyself to the chariot. Philip ran thither to him and heard him read the prophet Isaiah and said, Understandest what thou readest? Our conversation began with that question. So we're going to start with a simple premise. My goal in teaching on versions is exactly one. I want you to be able to understand, can you say it? What you read. I would say this, there has never been a time in the history of Christendom, at least since the Reformation, that churches have had less Bible reading than today. Now, I am going to recommend and have recommended you read other versions. I have not found Christians read other versions either. I find most people don't read. Did you all hear that? They don't read. And if they do read the scripture, it doesn't impact how they live at all. They basically conform to some external, whatever the church requires. So if there's no smoking in this church, more or less they don't smoke. Past that, it's just conformity. So I would like to think, number one, we read the scripture, and number two, we understand it, and number three, we can actually put it into our life. So when we come across Proverbs 14:4, immediately when you start saying, well, these kids I have, I wish I hadn't had so many kids. There are a lot of problems. My kids are not a problem to me at all. They're away from home. And the grandkids, I can send them on home. Let me ask you, do you think I'd like to grow old without grandchildren? So there's this piece of life where you can kind of say, I don't want all these problems anymore. Well, God bless you on not wanting problems, but that's kind of problems and blessings kind of go. By the way, that just comes from reading the verse. All right. We started by talking about this issue. That was last week. Textual basis. And we said there are a critical text and there is a majority text. Now, from these two, it isn't like you get two different Bibles. What you find is between these two, there are some differences. Most of them very small. Actually small enough that you would never notice them, with the exception of a passage here or there. And I'm not going to debate. I just want you to know, if you read a modern translation, they're normally going to come from the critical text, and you're going to be missing probably Mark 16, maybe John 8, those sections, and a verse or a line here or there. I think you could put all of it, as I said, and I'm pretty sure this is true, in one page, out of all the pages of the Bible. So I don't think it's going to be life-threatening. All right, the second issue are the translators themselves. That's where we're at this morning, the translators. Which means there has to be somebody who takes Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek, and translates it into, at least in this room for most of us, English. It might be into other languages, even in this room, that you read. But somebody has to actually take that from those original languages and bring it into English, or all of us have to learn these languages. That would be difficult for everybody to learn those languages. I want to ask a question. How many of you have ever translated? How many in this room? Now, this is a pretty simple question. Have ever been in a room where you had to translate for a guy speaking? Jim, now you've been translated before, haven't you? How do you like it? Yes. Especially when you come up against that evaporation word, right, that Dr. Marriott talked about. By the way, don't you dare tell a joke. Jokes are impossible to transfer into other languages. You know, when I go to the Philippines with all my pastor friends, you know, I always look at them and say, is this a Filipino joke? Because I don't ever get a Filipino joke. And what's funny is they don't get ours either. So I tell the best joke and they're like, in your notes. The translators, I say in your notes, this is obviously, this is an issue for any and all translations. Somebody has to do the translation, obviously. Several issues are important when it comes to this kind of a thing, and we're going to touch on this in several areas. First of all, the ability. You know, if you're going to translate, you have to have ability in a lot of, you have to have ability. That's the first issue. And let me ask you, what ability do you have to have? Well, you have to know these, but you also, and let me say something, if you read enough translations in English, you're going to realize something. Some of these translations have more abilities than some of the others. Some of them are not very pleasant to read. One of the translations, and I recommend it, it's good for study, the New American Standard, is probably the hardest version with outside of its originator, the American Standard Version, two hardest reading English versions you can get. It's hard to read them. Now, if you're used to it, why? I don't know if they're not good in English or they were trying to be so literal that it just, you have to have ability. And when I say ability, that's a lot of ability. How many in this room think you're really good in English? Let me ask a second question. How many of you think you're good at writing English? Now, if you don't read much, you won't recognize good writing from bad writing. If I see a person that writes well, and I have read one, Ms. Haas, in the last 25 to 30 years, I've read one person, you know who it is, that I thought, this person can write. You read The Big Tome, The Warmth of Many Suns. I don't think I've ever read a person write like that in English. Most theologians are terrible writers. You got to read the sentence 8 times, turn it upside down, and read it backwards. You're like, what did you say? And then there's people that I think are deliberately writing to confuse you. So, you have to have ability in your notes. I'm just going to be just some state some basic things. The King James Version men, the men that translated it, were men of the highest ability in Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek, especially in their day. There was no question about that. They were great. Next page. Some of you are going to be angry. I'm just throwing out stuff. The New King James Version, all you got to do is get a list of the translators, and this is what you're going to know. They were not of the highest caliber in anything. Hello? They were not in the highest caliber of anything. Do I need to say that again? The New King James Version basically took the King James Version and tried to modernize without having the scholarship behind it. It's okay, and sometimes it's good. The Living Bible. Does anybody know how the Living Bible came to be? I think you can still buy it. There's a New Living Translation too, which is later. Does anybody know how it came to be? Well, I'll tell you. The Living Bible was translated if that's the correct word, by one man for his children. One man does not have the ability to translate anything. And the funniest thing to me is you can actually, in the past, I don't have a clue, because I don't really, there's certain Bibles I don't mess with, not because they're all of the devil, I don't care about that. The Living Bible, the funniest thing was, the Living Bible was, what would you call it? Would you call it dumbed down? It was, he did this for his children so he could read it to them. And then they had the Living Bible study edition. Folks, you don't study a Bible dumbed down. There's nothing to study. Well, that's what it is. It's a paraphrase at best. And the Living Bible had that problem. So just to say, an actual ability, the King, I would say this, in actual ability, overall, no one has surpassed the King James for these and for this, and especially this. Now, I haven't said everything I'm going to say. That's going to be in a couple weeks. That doesn't mean we haven't learned anything about Hebrew in the last 400 years, anything about Greek, anything about Aramaic. I'm not saying there are no people today that are on their level. There are lots of people on their level. But when you put all that together, it's pretty hard to surpass the King James because of the uniqueness of the time. I'm assuming you know that the people that translated the Bible, most of them weren't married. If you were at Cambridge or Oxford, you normally didn't get married. You spent your life in study, which means how many distractions did you have? Really nothing. I mean, they just lived their life focused. They had their own, there's other situations. Now, the second issue that has to come up is bias. And I'm going to, see, I'm trying to be honest, and trying to be honest about this stuff is not what everybody likes. I think I have it in your notes. Every translation has what? Did you know that? Yes, every translation has bias. Now, frankly, how many of you have an ESV in your hand right now? All right, turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. I preached on it last Sunday morning. Let me show you bias. You don't mind. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. By the way, I'm going to talk about the King James, but remember, when I say every translation has bias, guess what I mean by that? No, I don't really mean every translation. I just mean the King James. No, everyone does. If you're going to use a translation other than the King James, one of the first things you want to do is learn what its biases are. And they all have it. Now, this is a bias, something that's obvious. 1 Timothy 4, verse 7. ESV, Tim, you want to read it? Can you see it? Or does Debbie need to look at it?
Have nothing to do with irreverent silliness. Rather, train yourself for godliness.
The second half is okay. Train, exercise is gymnazo. The first half is horrific. Because the King James says, but refuse profane and old wives' fables. And why didn't they took two phrases, slipped them together, and took out the part that talked about old wives' fables. Because what is our bias today? That's insulting to women. Are you all awake this morning? It's very insulting to women. That's patriarchal, that's misogynistic, blah, 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 blah. Actually, it's just common stock phrase that we use. Like cursing like a sailor. Yes, exactly. And by the way, I'm pretty sure there are sailors in here that didn't curse. Dada didn't. I don't know about Louis, but Dada didn't. Oh, you learned from Dada. So, can I ask you a question? You probably don't know that every translation has bias. We're going to deal with King James bias this morning. But take a breath. We could do this with any version because every version has bias. We're going to see some show up. And the bias is, hey, in a modern translation, this is what you want to look at. You want to step back and think, what is our culture saying? Because that's where the bias is going to show up in modern translations. They're going to try to kind of hedge around things that make people really offended. Of course, I don't think the passage is talking about women at all. I think it's just using curse like a sailor just language. It's language that everybody catches. Oh, bunch of women sitting around. In your notes. I say in your notes, the bias of the King James, it should be well known. If I asked you in this room, let's do this. Since this is teaching and I'm not in a hurry, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand and tell me biases of the King James Bible. You should know if you've been reading it for 30 years. Just tell me anything. Biases of the King James Bible. Liturgical. Yeah, ecclesiastical. Yeah. How about this? Church language. Is that a bias, yes or no? Is that a bias, yes or no? Some of you aren't sure. Well, when you're in the Philippines and you have King James only Baptist pastors who are uneducated and can't read English, and they see the word bishop, they grew up in what kind of a country? So they're thinking, I'm a bishop too. Which means I'm over other pastors. And they start building superstructures around nonsense. Yeah, there's lots of bias. But by the way, all translations have their own bias. The King James bias should be known to you. I look in your faces and I can see that it's not. I don't have words for that. So we'll move on. I'm going to come back to Easter in a minute. By the way, this is the most mistranslated word in the King James Bible. But it's no secret. Look me in the eyes, please. It's no secret. Oh my goodness, I've read that this is Easter comes from the word Astarte. And you know, this false god. And you know, I'm like, there's only one problem. Easter is a Germanic word. It doesn't come from the Middle East. Actually, Easter comes from one source. We'll get to that in a minute. Well, actually, we won't. Let's read some of the rules. This is what King James gave as rules for the King James translation, by the way. And when you have rules, these are called what? These are the biases. Yes, thank you. King James' first rule was this, the ordinary Bible read in the church before 1611. And which church is he talking about? Write that down, please. When it says the ordinary Bible read in the what? He's not talking about the Puritan church. He's talking about the Church of England. Commonly called the what? Well, thank you. Folks, the Puritans didn't use the Bishop's Bible. They used the Geneva Bible. Why did he not like the Geneva Bible? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But the Geneva Bible, I used to have one. I gave it to Maranatha. I spent a fortune when I was in St. Louis buying one of these New Testaments, an original copy, huge thing, just the New Testament. It had marginal notes all the way around. I mean, every place was notes. And I know why he didn't like that Bible, because it was not very nice to kings. And it also was a Puritan Bible, so it had all the doctrines that a church like ours would believe. And he wanted a Bible. Well, he's going to say that in a minute. Oh, may I say this? I have a book at home that actually they have found pages of the Bishop's Bible with marginal annotations. So they know that the translators of the King James used the Bishop's Bible and took notes in the margins, and that's how they translate. That's portion of the translation. So we actually have this. So it says, the ordinary Bible read in the Anglican Church, commonly called the Bishop's Bible, is to be followed and as little altered as the truth of the original will permit. And of course, that is a slam against the Geneva Bible. Number two is not as significant. Number three, folks, is absolute rock-ribbed, got to know this principle. If you ever read the King James Bible and don't know this principle, you're wasting your life. The old ecclesiastical words to be kept. The word of church not to be translated what? They preferred that everything be fuzzy. Now, can I tell you a secret? You already know where this word comes from now. That is called a what kind of a word? Old ecclesiastical word. Hello? The only question you need to ask now was this. Was this old ecclesiastical word found in which Bible? Thank you, Rhonda. Was it found in the Bishop's Bible? If it was found in the Bishop's Bible and it was an old ecclesiastical word, guess what? Wow, some of you, your minds aren't clicking. This is the reason King James Onlyism infiltrates churches. Folks, it wasn't a suggestion from the king. It was life or death. Don't touch old ecclesiastical words. And number two, use the Bishop's Bible. So if the Bishop's Bible has Easter, and that's an old ecclesiastical word, guess what's going to show up in Acts chapter 12? Mm-hmm. And that's, by the way, nothing about Astarte, nothing about some other Easter. Oh my goodness, the things people say. Well, let's see here. Number six. No marginal notes at all to be affixed. What is that a comment about? The Geneva Bible. We don't want any notes because those notes are hard on the king. He says, but they would allow notes for the explanation of a Hebrew or Greek words, which the King James originally had bunches of those. When I looked at the I have it. I can bring it maybe in the next week or the next week after. Christy, we'll have to do that thing from University of Pennsylvania has that one online. When you look at the original 1611, which you don't have, of course, you'll find in the margins, you know, there's two margins, inside one and outside one. There's Greek and Hebrew all through the Bible. There was no such animal as the Bible was inspired in the way the King James people think. Because they didn't know how some of the words were translated, they put that in the margin. Or they said it could have been this, it could have been that. They didn't always know, which that's called honesty. But there would be no marginal notes. They could have Hebrew or Greek words, but nothing else. Let's see here. I'm not going to read all of these because really some of this is more interesting than other. Look at number 14. Pastor Kwok, I'll let you read number 14. Do you have it? And the last one was? Now, the funny part about that, of course, is the Tyndale New Testament. Tyndale never finished the Bible. The Tyndale New Testament was the King James and was the Geneva, too. So there's kind of a little bit of humor there, but he hated this Geneva Bible. So anything you do, make sure you don't have the Geneva Bible. There's a lot of other things there. You can read all that on your own. Now, there's this little phrase. It's called tapasca. This phrase, it has a real funky meaning. It means this. It can also mean this. And it can also mean, and how do I know it means this? We're going to read every verse. That's how you're going to know. How do you know what words mean? Kayla? Thank you, Kayla. Context. Words are like people. They're known by the company they keep. Words do not have meaning, only potential meaning. Context gives them meaning. If I say she's hot, without knowing context, you don't have a clue what I just said. Is that correct? Yes or no? It's the same with any language. By the way, Greek is not magic, fell out of heaven. Just a language, just like every other language. And every language has context. It can also mean one other thing we'll see. There's one thing, by the way, that it cannot mean. What can it not mean? It cannot mean that. So let's look at Acts chapter 12 first, would you? I did this in the Philippines and had Filipino pastors so angry at me. And it's just like, I guess when you have beliefs like a Catholic and you don't have any way of justifying your beliefs, the only thing you have left is anger. By the way, remember the worst combination is ignorance and arrogance. Somebody told me they think those two are the same. But when you put ignorance and arrogance together, then you have opinions about things that are like, where did you get those opinions? Why do you believe these things? Because I know. And here's the funny part. Some of you, Phil, if they send you off to Spain, you've already been in these churches in Japan, you're going to run into a pastor that you have to sit there. You don't have a choice but to be part of a church. All right? Let me just speak it straight. James guy, probably ignorant. And you know what you're going to do as a chief and a man, as a Christian? You're going to suck it up and move right forward. Because most of what he's going to say is going to be down the middle of the road and it's going to be fine. And the rest of it, let me compare it to this. When I talk to Filipino pastors, I use this illustration every year. It's like eating manok, chicken. There's three ways to eat manok. Some people eat bones and all, not good. Some people don't eat chicken because it has bones. And some people eat the chicken, throw the bones out. Guess what you have to learn to do? Just that simple. All right. Acts chapter 12, verse 1. Now about that time, Herod the king, this is Herod Agrippa number one, okay? This is not Herod the Great. This is not Herod Antipas. This is Herod Agrippa number one, a grandson. Herod Agrippa I's best buddy was Gaius Caligula. He actually had part of his funerary rites. He grew up in Rome. So Herod Agrippa the first, his son Herod Agrippa the second is going to show up later. Herod stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church. And he killed James, the brother of John, with a sword. And because he saw it pleased whom? He proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. You know, during that period of time. And when he had apprehended Peter, he put him in prison and delivered him to four. And all that quaternions mean is four groups of four. Of soldiers to keep him, intending after, and then the King James says Easter. It's like, where does Easter come from? Well, folks, it's just the same word as this little phrase right here. Now, the next phrase is the most important phrase for your money's worth this morning. Well, not the most important. Let's see. It's verse 3, the first line says, and because he saw it pleased whom? Everything Herod Agrippa I is doing is he's trying to please the Jews. There was no celebration of Easter. Easter is a Christian celebration. Jews wouldn't care about that. And Easter and Passover, let's ask a hard question. Are they always fall at the same time? Can somebody just raise your hand and tell me why not? Roz. The Jewish people use a calendar that's based on the national celebrations that's based on the moon. So sometimes Easter and Passover will be, sometimes it'll be a month apart. Remember, there's about a month, 30 or so days give on either side. Yes or no? Okay. By the way, folks, the Jewish people couldn't care less about a Christian holiday, but they cared a lot about Passover, which is what the Greek text says. So the text says ta pascha. Let's look at in your notes, please. You know that after 2 days is the feast of the what? Everybody got notes? Matthew 26:2. Read with me when I asked you, please. You know that after 2 days is the feast of the what? The Pascha. 26:17. Now the first day of the feast of the unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying to him, where wilt thou that we prepare to eat the what? Now Passover there refers to what? The meal. Just slight, it all refers to the same events, but you don't eat a day, I don't think. Matthew 26:18. He says, Jesus says, I will keep the Passover at thy house. Verse 19 says, and the disciples did as Jesus appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. And there's probably talking about the meal plus the surrounding elements. Mark 14, 2 days was the feast of the Passover. Verse 12 says, when they killed the Passover, that's the meal. You don't kill the day. Do I need to say this? Words do not have meaning. They only have potential meaning. Context gives them meaning. Ta Pascha always refers to the Passover, either the day or the week or the meal or those things that went on during that time. 14:14 talks about, let's see, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover? Verse 16 says, and they made ready the Passover, which would be the food and the other elements. Luke 2:41, now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. Now the feast of the unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover. Luke 22:7, then came the day of unleavened bread when the Passover must be killed. Some people try to say, yeah, but Acts was talking about the feast of the unleavened bread. And the problem is they use these terms in different ways when we're reading this. Can I do this? I don't want to read every one of these verses. Ta Pascha only means one thing. And it never means anything to do with Easter. Are we clear on that? So you say, is the King James wrong? 100%. But it's wrong intentionally. And an intelligent Christian would know that their rules were, if the bishop's Bible has it, keep it. And if it's old church language, don't change it. So we don't go, wow, the Bible's not, oh, take a breather. It is what it is. Bishop's Bible and old church language. Look down to Acts chapter 12. We'll read the last few of these. Now about that time, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church. And he killed James, the brother of John, with a sword, and because he saw it pleased the Jews. He wasn't doing this for Christians. He proceeded further to take Peter also. Then were the days of unleavened bread. Actually, I know I did. What in the world happened there? I added something that weren't supposed to be there. I'll have to remove that. Anyhow, verse 4 says, and when they had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to the four groups of four soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter, after the Passover. Why? Because it would offend the Jewish people to do anything to somebody during the Passover. And Passover here simply means, look up here, folks, it means the Passover season. Sometimes it's the actual day of Passover. Sometimes it's talking about the season. Sometimes it's talking about the sacrifice. Sometimes they'll use the Feast of Unleavened Bread to refer to all of these because they're all connected. Those are all the uses. Everybody look at me. All the uses in the New Testament. Is this boring to you? The answer is probably yes. But I try to be honest about things for whatever strange reason. Next page, 1 Timothy 3. First Timothy 3. What do we have in 1 Timothy 3? What do we have? We have this thing called what? The King James puts the office, and by the way, there is no even phrase for office. It just simply says episcopates, which is a form of bishop. or overseer. So that's one of the translation bugaboos. How about 1 Timothy 4:14? This is always clear to all of you. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. What is the presbytery? Well, it's just a word for presbyteros, elders, and it just means the elders or pastors of the church laid hands on them. But guess what? They had a presbytery. They had bishops. So they couldn't change that language, is the point. It was not allowed. They were forbidden to change that sort of language. Yes. Well, but it was only the ecclesiastical words was the big issue. It wasn't the rest. They didn't mind working on the rest. And some of it, the Bishop's Bible wasn't particularly good. It actually was put together by, shockingly enough, some bishops. It was put together in reaction to the Geneva Bible. Nobody liked it. Even the Anglican Church didn't like it. So what ended up happening is the Anglicans wanted it redone, but they didn't want to go the direction of the Geneva people. So, but only in the ecclesiastical words. So words like bishop, look at me, folks, words like deacon. You know, think about this. If every time you saw the word deacon in the New Testament, if it just said servant, would that be a better thing? Yes. Because diakonos just means servant. But you go to certain Southern Baptist type of churches and they have a board of deacons that runs their church. And it's like a board of servants? What does that even mean? Or in other churches, they have a deacons, which they do some things, and then they have a board of trustees that runs the church. Strange. You know, we have all these phrases. Baptism is another word. By the way, what's the word baptized mean? Every Baptist knows what the word baptized means, don't you? Then why wasn't it translated? Well, that ain't going to make the Church of England happy. Go out and immerse people. One of our great missionaries, by the way, Adoniram Judson, the translation done in Burma, he actually translated the word baptize, immerse. And lots of folks were mad. What are you mad about? It's the way it is. Let's skip on down. The word church, of course, is a problematic phrase. It means congregation. Now we're going to get to the worst translation in the King James Bible. Actually, indecipherable. The Greek word is only found twice. 1 Timothy 1, you find that? For whoremongers, and then you have one Greek word in all these English words for that. For them that defile themselves with mankind. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words for one Greek word. What does it mean to defile themselves with mankind? Now, hold it. You might have heard me teach on this. Would you know what it means from that phrase? Of course not. This is one of King James's little problems. King James had boyfriends. And I've even heard people try to defend him. I'm like, why are you trying to defend him? I don't get it. These are well-known things. Let me just say this. This ugly guy here, Cretan, semi-hugged me before the church. King James was tonguing his boyfriend in public in council. Please don't tell me he wasn't gay. No, he actually probably wasn't gay. He was a degenerate. That's worse than that, because meaning, much like a lot of the Roman emperors, sexuality with anything. That King James had at least 3 boyfriends in his time. Now, the Puritans didn't know this initially. They thought he came from godly Scotland. There was no communication. You didn't see people on television. You didn't check your Facebook feed or your Instagram feed. You know, they didn't know. And by the way, how many Puritan pastors ever got to go in to chambers with King James? None. He hated the Puritans with a passion. So you have this one phrase that is just inconceivable. But before you get mad, It's that way in most translations. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9 says this, "Know you not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate." And that is a good translation of that word, malakoi, effeminate. It means the feminine partner in a homosexual relationship. Then you have this other, which is only abusers, five words. Abusers of themselves with mankind, whatever that means. Now, if you skip down to the ESV does not really do a great job here either. It translates two different Greek words as how many? Well, it translates it one way. Folks, the Greek is very specific. It's talking about, the feminine partner and the masculine partner. In the ESV, just makes it one group. Why? Because this is offensive in the modern world. The New King James, by the way, the closest to being accurate of all is the New King James. Homosexuals nor sodomites. The problem is, you still don't have the passive and active partners. The NIV just says, nor men who have sex with men. Again, we take two groups and put them into one. The NASB is pretty close. Feminine nor homosexuals. Maybe that's the closest of all. Except, strangely, the New Revised Standard Version talks about male prostitutes and sodomites. So I want you to look me in the eyes. I recommend the ESV, but do not think you have arrived at the pinnacle of all knowledge because you use it. Because every version has everyone. In your notes, the worst translation of all, and we close with this morning. Yes. I think we're going to close with this. Yes. Where's translation? I think Nicole has a copy. The Jehovah Witness so-called Bible. I'm serious. Jehovah Witness decided to change whatever they didn't like. So they went through the Bible trying to change things. Folks, that's no translation at all. That is simply doctoring things up to try to manipulate. So what we're going to do is this. Please look at me. When it comes to the translators, you want to look at ability. King James had that. ESV is pretty good on that, but I talked to Dr. Saxon. I believe this with all my heart. I don't like it. We don't have the money in America among people like us to get 50 people and set them aside for the next 10 years to revise the Bible in a super accurate way. It's never been done exactly like that since 1611. Can you imagine what it would cost for 50 people or so for good salaries for 10 years to go through a process? There would still be problems, but every modern version is, in my opinion, done far too quickly because they just don't have the money. The ESV, does anybody know where it comes from? Comes from the RSV. The RSV of 1952, which was the liberal group that did it. They just take it and rid it of all the liberal stuff and modernize some things, but they did not have time to do the job that should have been done. Hear me again, 10 years. Troy Manning told me after doing the New Testament in the Philippines, he says, as long as I'm at Bibles International, we'll never go to the Philippines to do a translation there. Because they still don't have it in print. Because the pastors there would rather people not understand the Bible than them understand the Bible. And Troy Manning, listen to me, when he's here in a couple weeks, I'm going to have him do this in Sunday school. They come the closest to anybody that I've ever seen to do what the New Testament, what the King James guys did when they translate. The process is brilliant. But every time I'm around Troy, I want to commit suicide because I think the amount of work this takes is beyond belief. Because, see, when you translate, you have to do it in a way where when people hear it, it sounds like what you think you're saying. And I'm a little late. That'll be okay. I still remember going to Venezuela, having my notes translated by Lourdes Velez, which did a great job. But there was one phrase in a whole stack of notes, 60 pages, that the way she, and she's highly educated, smart, very smart woman, but Venezuelans use it differently. And instead of saying what it was supposed to say, it said something offensive. Just Spanish region to Spanish region. We'll have Troy maybe go through the process on Sunday school so you get an idea how difficult this is. Father, thank you for this day. Bless our time. In Christ's name.